It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio CALS, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org. This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio CALS. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of, and some you haven't heard of but probably want to know more about. Check out cals.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
Welcome to another episode of Primary Sources, a service of Central Arkansas Library System. I'm Matt DeCampbell. Our guest this time is Gretchen Hall, President and CEO of the Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau, which we'll just call the CVB from here on out. Thank you for being here, Gretchen.
Thanks for having me.
What are you doing on a typical day, if as typical as they get?
Well, I think it's all atypical, actually. Lots of meetings and events. It really changes week to week. We've had so many different meetings and conventions come in. Our facilities are really to capacity. There is always an event going on. So I may be speaking at one of those, giving them a welcome. I may be looking into what's the next big thing. We're looking and talking about infrastructure. We're constantly working with the city because we manage most of the facilities we manage are city-owned facilities. And so it varies. I travel some on a couple of boards and commissions, and so that takes me out of the market some, but that gives me an opportunity to see what other cities and destinations are doing and mm-hmm. continue to stay on top of those industry trends, which then we can bring back home and implement here in Little Rock.
When you are pitching Little Rock to a convention or to a group to come here, what is a key selling point that most of them don't realize?
So one of the keys, well, first and foremost for a meeting planner, the answer they need is, will it fit? And so do we have the facilities that will fit their convention? Then they move quickly into access. How do my attendees get here? And thankfully, we have a national airport that's just minutes from downtown. And we also have a tremendous roadway structure that correlates right here in Central Arkansas. And so all of that helps. Then we get to the fun selling part. So if we can check off the necessities, we get to the fun selling part. And those groups that need the convention center, the larger groups, the citywide conventions, they love seeing the walkability of our downtown and the amenities that are so close and nearby, whether that's a streetcar ride to a variety of museums, whether it's just a few blocks into the River Market Entertainment District or down Main Street for restaurants and entertainment options. They really enjoy that walkability. And then for the really large groups or the small groups that place outside of downtown, they love the fact that there's very little congestion and it is easy to get from West Little Rock to downtown in just a few minutes. And so for the smaller feel and the convenience is always a benefit and a selling point.
Well, how do we sell the city now compared to how we would have outside of the obvious, large changes like the Clinton Library and everything that's followed in the River Market? But how do we sell and approach the city now versus how we would have done it 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Well, to your point, the city is completely different than it was 10 to 15 years ago. And so from a product standpoint, we have a tremendous more amount of activities, whether that's festivals and events, whether that is infrastructure and museums and attractions, whether they have completely changed or renovated or they didn't exist 10 years ago. So our product is completely different. But we also use different marketing mechanisms. So there is a tremendous tremendous amount of social media engagement now that didn't exist 10 years ago. Mobile presence, web presence, a lot of advertising going to video and mobile and web versus the print and the traditional television. Even television advertising is changing now because of all of the online access to television. So, you know, we've really had to continue to stay on top of those trends in order to get the message to the right people, in order to talk about what all Little Rock has to offer.
How much outreach do you do to some of the smaller communities in Arkansas? Like you said, there's not a lot of competition. It's all partnerships. As they're trying to revitalize, you know, their downtown, or they're trying to grow their appeal to niche groups out there, how much are you able to offer help with that, especially when you're talking about, like you say, all these new vistas of advertising that are out there?
So we work really well with our state partners on that front. And so the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism provides several programs that really do help those smaller communities. And then we do packaging with some of the smaller communities, especially for reunions and group tours and some of those groups that specifically want to move around the state. They want authentic and unique experiences, and some of those can be found right here in Little Rock, and some of them are an hour's drive or a day trip from Little Rock, and we encourage that as well.
So when you have, you don't have to name names, please, but what are some memorable either misconceptions or odd requests that you've heard from you know, people or groups potentially coming to Little Rock that you've had to put them back on the road about?
You know, those run the gamut, and they're all so very different. A couple of things that come to mind. People are shocked that truly travel a lot. They are shocked at the proximity of our airport to downtown. So I love getting the question on, you know, how long is it going to take me to get from the airport to, you know, our downtown hotel? And when I tell them, you know, maybe 8 minutes in traffic, that really sets them back a little bit. So that's kind of a fun plug for them. You know, a couple of other questions that we get. People always have some fun questions about the Clinton Library and what all can I really see there, and what's really accessible in those archives. And so that's a fun to play off of a little bit, and to have a couple of, you know, unique stories about the library. They always have some questions about the executive suite on top of the library, and how do I know if the president's in town? And so we have fun playing that up as well. So.
Oh, yeah. We could have it like Buckingham Palace, when they have a different flag that they fly when the queen is in residence.
That's right.
Versus when she's gone.
That's right.
We could come up with something for that. We've been, I mean, really fortunate, not only for the Clinton Library and what it's done, and the whole Clinton Center and the Clinton School, but when you have projects like the full renovation of the Capitol Hotel, when you have, you know, all these things, I mean, when has there been a time in your tenure you can remember where we didn't have some significant renovation going on?
Thankfully, no. you know, and I think that's a great thing, because it always gives us something new to talk about. And that infrastructure runs deep. It's public and private. And you mentioned the Capitol Hotel. You know, we had private investors come in and put in millions into our headquarter hotel in the Marriott. And then mm-hmm. we've had lots of highway department projects with the I-430 interchange out in West Little Rock, and the new Broadway Bridge in downtown, and the renovation of Robinson Center, the expansion of the Museum of Discovery through the Reynolds grant there. So we've had a tremendous amount of infrastructure and growth, whether that be in our highway infrastructure or our facility infrastructure as well.
And I bet when I said Capitol Hotel, you thought I was going to say the Robinson Center, because that is probably the thing we share the most as far as what we talk about. But how has the renovation of the Robinson Center, how has it changed how you can pitch Little Rock to people? Because it is, I mean, it always had some you know, convention facilities to it or meeting facilities to it. But now it's a whole nother level.
That's right. And so from a meeting perspective, it's a small conference center. We weren't trying to develop an additional convention center that was, you know, that was not part of the project. The crown jewel of Robinson is that performance hall. Mm-hmm. And the amount of entertainment and the quality of entertainment we have now been able to attract and will in the future has been tremendous. It has far exceeded our expectations. We felt very confident in the quality and the amount of Broadway we would be able to provide for the community, as well as an uptick in the quality for the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra that calls that performance hall home. And they have both seen tremendous growth in their ticket sales and their season subscribers, and we're really pleased with that. But the real surprise and the far exceeding expectations is the variety of other shows that we've been able to offer. And that runs the gamut from hip-hop concerts to country acts to alternative music, comedians, you know, it just runs the gamut, and we're so pleased with that. And the word's getting out. So we've done some advertising and outreach. We've rekindled some relationships with booking agents that we had in the past but hadn't been to Little Rock in several years. And we're developing lots of new relationships every day.
Well, it feels like, too, and please correct me if needed, but once you get established as the, you know, a performance facility that has this amenity, this and this and this, and this number of seats, and you get put in a category by bookers that when they're just drawing a map, you're one that they can,
that's right,
they can check on a trip between Dallas and Nashville,
yes,
or between Chicago and New Orleans.
Yes.
And is that what you've found with some of them?
We have. And so we're redeveloping relationships that we had in the past that, mm-hmm, had just not been to our market in many, many years because the facility was not one that was really conducive to providing a good entertainment option. So they left our market for quite a while, and then now they're going back and telling their friends. So they've not only come back to the market, but they're bringing more shows. And so they're pleased with their attendance, they're pleased with the facility, and they're booking more shows, and they're telling additional people about it. And so the number of shows that we've been able to attract outside of our regular seasons has been really phenomenal.
Do you have a ballpark on the, you know, the booking rate as far as nights per year before and after?
We're looking forward to being able to evaluate those numbers. We're still in our first full 12-month,
sure,
period, and so we're tracking those. But I'm anxious to get our first full 12-month period and comparison of the last 12 months and the new first 12 months. The numbers are going to be staggering.
That's clearly a question you've answered before. I can tell from your response. And in addition to, it feels like, in some of the events I've been there for, with the added variety of events and acts, you're bringing people to Robinson who haven't been there before.
Absolutely.
Because they're not your typical Broadway crowd or symphony crowd. And once they get there, obviously it all steamrolls in a positive direction, but do you hear feedback from, you know, people from other parts of the state who have, you know, who would never think to go to Robinson, but now are?
We do. And we're getting return visitors. And, you know, what we have really tried to staff up, and, you know, there's been some lumps as we learn and feel the new facility, because it is totally different than the old facility. And so we've had a lot of staff that have worked in the previous performance hall and are now trying to get used to this performance hall. And so learning the facility internally so that we can help provide directions even to getting people to their seats has been a little bit of a challenge at times. Having so many first-timers come into the building, we're thrilled to do that. Some people underestimate the amount of time that it takes, especially for a daytime performance, to get parked and, mm-hmm, get into the facility and find their seat and navigate through a new facility. So we're trying to continually work on that outreach. Unfortunately, we're continuing to have to work on the outreach of ticket scalpers and the third party agents. And so we have seen an uptick in that. You know, you have an increase in ticketed events, you're, mm-hmm, going to have an increase in some of those that are, selling either fraudulent tickets or price gouging on those tickets. And so we're continually trying to educate the community about where to buy legitimate tickets for that performance hall.
And when you talk about misjudging the time, let's give a bit of a public service announcement here, because it's, I think what a lot of people don't always understand is if you're there for like a concert, like, a, you know, not a symphony concert, but like a pop or rock or country or hip hop concert, versus if you're there for a symphony or a Broadway show, there seems to be a little more leeway in the former, whereas the latter, you could find yourself shut out at 7:02.
That's correct. So some of the shows have a little leeway on their opening act, but not a lot of them. So a lot of them are really time sensitive. And so especially for Broadway or symphony, if you miss that opening curtain, you may have to stand in the hallway or in our sound and light lock for through the first, you know, show set. And that may be one long song. It may be a series of songs before we can get you in and get you seated.
So plan ahead.
Yes,
please. All right. You knew I was going to bring this up, too. With all these new patrons and some of these longtime patrons, what's an unusual problem that has continued to plague this beautiful new facility?
You know, it's frustrating to see a beautiful facility of any kind, public or private, and people not taking care of it. And so whether that be, you know, banging our benches into the walls and cutting up the walls, or whether it be sticking their chewing gum
there
on the
is.
Back of the chair or spitting it out in the carpet and thinking that's okay, that's not okay.
And how has that improved? Because we have worked together to get the word out on that earlier this year. But has it improved any? Is it still a pretty consistent problem?
You know, maybe it's curbed a little. I would like to think now that we've had so many people come into the performance hall and the facility itself. But it's still something that after every show we have to go through and check all the chairs and the carpet. And you know, and now we've got repairs to make, and we're making those. They're on a regular basis.
Sure.
But, you know, I just ask people to try to take care of the facilities that we have, because then they last longer and we can continue to provide great entertainment.
And I'm jealous a lot of times of first timers, because I'm so trained to the old Robinson and how to get around in there and where you go. I have to imagine that you have a lot of shows with a lot of lost people wandering around, especially now that you even have more floors of the performance area than you did before.
That's correct. And so, you know, when we first started, I think even for people like you that were really familiar with the old facility, you've now kind of learned the new one.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple of shows, it was really fun. We put a lot of our ticket takers and ushers up on the original historic lobby level,
right,
which used to be the orchestra level.
Yep.
And a lot of people still enjoy the nostalgia of traversing those grand stairs outside and coming into that historic lobby. And it is a beautiful space. But then when they come in and we look at their tickets and we say, you're on the orchestra floor.
You're two floors down.
And you need to go down two flights of stairs that you just traversed up. And so most people are now understanding where and how to enter the building. And that will continue to grow.
And talk a little bit about that. The change to the structure itself that changed what is orchestra level and changed how you could manage capacity of the building.
Yeah, so the biggest change was the fact that the stage and the orchestra floor used to be on the third floor of the building, and now it's on the lower floor of the building. We dropped it 31 feet down to the ground level, and so that created a lot of volume in the house, the performance hall. Now we have two real balconies, where previously we simply had an elongated mezzanine and a single balcony, and now we've pulled all of those seats closer to the stage. They've all been pulled about 20 feet or so closer to the stage, so sight lines are better. The more volume created better acoustics for the performance hall. We've got box seating now that wraps the facility, so it really gives an intimate feel. We did reduce seats just a little, but we're still at a little over 2,200 for our capacity. We've got multiple levels of lobby and built-in concessions and expanded restroom facilities and multiple entrances into the performance hall now, which provides for easier access in and out when mm-hmm. people are coming and going. And so all of those have been really great amenities. And now we've got direct access from our parking garage that's attached as well. And so that gives you covered parking and direct access right into the building.
What part of Little Rock do you see as the next frontier for the most growth as far as tourism and convention facilities?
You know, I'm certainly hoping that we can find a way to develop some sports facilities in Little Rock. Sports are near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And youth sports and the travel with youth sports is a huge piece of tourism product. We do a lot of sporting events now, but they're spread throughout the city, and we're really limited on what we can host because of the lack of facilities. And so we really need some really great facilities for our amateur and our youth sporting events, and whether that's an indoor complex for basketball and volleyball and table tennis and expanded taekwondo and other activities that need a roof and an indoor facility, or whether that be an expansion of soccer fields and softball and baseball complex to be able to attract those not only community and statewide events, but national and regional events as well.
I think you buried the lead there. Are we in contention for significant table tennis tournaments in Little Rock?
And horseshoe pitching.
Really?
Yeah. National horseshoe pitchers. It exists.
Well, I can see the horseshoe pitchers, especially in the South. But that's pretty incredible that you could have a ping pong tournament, table tennis being the formal term.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to one of those before, a national tournament?
I have not physically been to one. I have seen some of the videos of one, and it's pretty impressive setup.
And there's tournaments for everything now, obviously.
Absolutely.
And you have the rise in electronic gaming competitions.
Yes.
Is that an area that we've had outreach on or
we are.
Made outreach
so
to?
We're hosting now, and it's, I believe, third year, the first robotics convention,
which
is a statewide convention there. We're seeing a growth in some of the comic conventions, and like a Comic-Con type.
Yeah.
Quidditch. Who knew? But Quidditch is growing.
I probably know. just given the love people have for those books, I'm not terribly
That's
surprised.
Right. That's right. And so, we're seeing growth in a lot of different sports as well, and more hobby and sports related. So lacrosse and rugby and our futsal, which is our indoor soccer, a lot of different growth there. So the potential's great if we can continue to develop and grow our infrastructure. I think the payoff is going to be wonderful.
Outside of sports, then, what kind of niche tourism are you seeing trending in recent years?
You know, I've been somewhat surprised at the continual either steady path or slight uptick in motor coach groups. And so a lot of groups, and it's not just those beyond baby boomers that are getting on the motor coaches anymore. There are really some that do experiential and some adventure travel, but they do them in groups together. Some of the student groups that are coming in. So we're still seeing a very consistent play in our motor coach and tourism market.
Wow. And what about specific activities? Like, you know, obviously we've seen the river trail growing and, you know, bringing more bike traffic
mm-hmm.
and running traffic. Are there things like that in other parts of the city that people may not think about that are also either ripe for development or becoming developed?
You know, I think a lot of groups, whether it be reunions or group travel in the motor coach or even convention groups or leisure travelers, they really want that local and authentic experience. And so they're wanting more information about our local neighborhoods. And so they'll go spend an afternoon in Soma to see Bernice Garden and to grab a loblolly ice cream cone and to eat at the Root Cafe and to visit the Essie Pierce Museum. And that's a really unique cluster there in that neighborhood. Or maybe they go up to the Heights and Hillcrest because they simply want to walk on really great sidewalks and visit unique stores and art galleries and pop in and out in addition to being able to go, you know, to West Little Rock and have the Arkansas's first outlet mall or learn more about being able to kayak in Fouche Creek area in downtown Little Rock. And so it's a lot of those hands-on unique aspects of Little Rock, bottling at Rocktown Distillery, grabbing a locally labeled passport and learning about our breweries and wineries and our distillery. So we have a tremendous amount of product here. And then the other growing aspect is our Civil Rights Trail and the Civil Rights app, and Central High Museum, of course, is a keystone of that, and getting ready to celebrate a wonderful anniversary there of the integration. And our National Park System continues to help with the outreach there. But we have a tremendous amount of African-American history and culture here in Little Rock that we're packaging and providing information to travelers.
And that recent Dreamland Ballroom yes, documentary. Sure,
absolutely.
Sure didn't hurt that effort.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
We talked a lot about technology, and you just mentioned like the app for the Civil Rights Trail and all that. How do you find the balance, you know, from your position when you have these advances in technologies that help you promote, but then also create things like Airbnb and create things like Uber that may in fact help bring people, especially to other parts of the cities, but then also clash with, you know, traditional providers?
It's a growing issue in our industry, and I use the term issue loosely. That's not a negative term. That's simply learning and understanding the trends. And Airbnb, I think, is here to stay, and it's only going to grow. The whole sharing economy, and it doesn't just belong in the lodging aspect, but as you mentioned, Uber and other aspects as well. And so we have to find ways to partner and promote those activities. You know, one thing that we opened was our new hostel, and we had not had a hostel in Little Rock, and that opens up new doors because there is a whole community that they only travel by those hostel, and a lot of that is popular internationally. So we're seeing a little uptick there as well now that we have a product to offer them. And so we have to find ways to be able to promote those and work with those organizations, but also make sure it's an equal playing field. So back to the Airbnb problem or growing issue, you know, we're funded by a lodging tax, and all of our brick and mortar lodging properties pay that tax and receive benefits because of it as the growing tourism product. And the Airbnb outlets they're running a business, and they need to abide by those same rules. And we're working with city ordinances, state ordinances, in order to make sure that they are abiding by those same rules and regulations and providing that tax increase and tax income back to the organizations in order to keep it a level playing field.
So and just the rapid growth rate that we're seeing right now with like you said, the sharing economy and everything, it's a matter of just as much, it sounds like, keeping up as it is anticipating what's next, because a lot of times it's there before you can even think about it.
That's right. That's right. Chef Shuttle and the growth of the growth of Chef Shuttle is another one. And so we're continuing to see all of that. We're watching that. And that's the reason that, you know, we're involved in a lot of national organizations of convention and visitors bureaus to have that research and see what larger cities are doing and how they're handling some of these issues and trying to get out in front and have, whether it be ordinances lined up and ready for that when it comes to Little Rock, or whether it be working with them and learning how to promote and grow and make it a win-win.
So now we come to the part where you get to do your job, and I'll just give you the open opportunity to promote whatever you want. If someone in town is part of an organization they want to try to bring here, or if you're not from Little Rock and listening to this and want more information, what do they do?
So you can get all of our contact information on littlerock.com. That's our full website. For those that are in Little Rock, I'll give a shameless plug real quick on if you sit on a board or a commission or attend an annual convention and you feel that it is of size that would work here in Little Rock, or you're not sure if it will fit here in Little Rock, reach out to us. We would love to be able to work with you and bring that convention and allow you to showcase your hometown as well. It provides a huge economic impact. And so we're continually trying to educate the community on what that impact is and how you can help affect it. And that is one way that you can really help us move that needle. It's tourism in Arkansas is the number two economic generator for our state. So it means big business. And that trickle effect really helps the entire economy. And so as we continue to grow our tourism numbers, so does the growth of our local economy. And so you really are providing a service home. And so we would love to help you with that. If you know of a meeting or convention or sporting event that you think would be a great fit for Little Rock, give us a call. You can find all of our information at littlerock.com.
Again, clearly not the first time that you've had to give that spiel. Our guest has been Gretchen Hall with the Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thank you so much for agreeing to subject yourself to my questions once again.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you can find other episodes on our website, Central Arkansas Library System's website, which is cals.org, along with a ton more information and other resources and other things to listen to. So check it out, and we will see you the next time around.
You've been listening to Primary Sources on Radio CALS, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System, its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Job and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell Hoskin and David Strickland.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.